Hola, I'm Dan Mullins and it's great to be with you. This is a weekly podcast featuring pilgrims who have walked the Camino de Santiago, the many and varied paths to the remains of Christ's Apostle St. James in Santiago de Compostela. A different approach this week. I've started to receive correspondence from across the world, people thinking of walking, people who started and didn't finish, and an email this week from a woman who listens each week and would love to walk but is too frightened. Well, Terry, a quote for you this week from Nigerian writer E.J. Omar Umebinyu. Start now, start where you are. Start with fear, start with pain. Start with doubt, start with hands shaking. Start with voice trembling, but start. Start and don't stop. Start where you are, with what you have, just start. So we're going to touch base this week with two of my former guests, both of whom are actually walking the Camino right now. It's been a bit of a logistical nightmare, but I've managed to find Brad Gennaro and Mick McQueen. Brad featured in Podcast 10 and Mick in Podcast 11. They're walking the Camino this week. And before we cross to Spain, I thought I'd give you an update on my Camino. I told my story in week one of My Camino, the podcast. I walked from Sahagún to Santiago last July and August, arriving on my 50th birthday. I returned, eager to maintain my engagement with the experience, and I made so many wonderful friends on my journey, I wanted to keep the lines of communication open. So being a content producer in my day job, I developed this podcast, and the response has been overwhelming. I've spoken to authors, to movie directors, housewives, Catholic priests, motivational speakers, army veterans, doctors, people suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, Parkinson's, and cancer. It's been another journey, if you like, a journey of discovery, 10,000 miles from Spain. I shared my own story in week one. Then week two, I spoke with two Canadians, Miles Murphy and Doug Proch. Their philosophy was simple, just do it. Week three and four, I spoke with the Australian filmmaker Bill Bennett about walking using your instincts and following your instincts. And Bill is currently putting the finishing touches to a film about instinct. It's called PGS, the Personal Guidance System. Week five was Canadian broadcaster Laurie Brown. Laurie talked about finding herself by getting lost. Week six was My Camino mentor, Jose Luis Pedraza. Two podcasts side by side, one in English and one in Spanish. And I wanted to know what the Spanish make of pilgrims and why the Camino is so special to the local economy and culture. Week seven is Rebecca Scott, an American writer who packed up and moved to Spain to live on the Camino, a great yarn from someone not frightened to tell it like it is. Week eight is Ailsa Piper and Father Tony Doherty, and a yarn about their new book, The Attachment. Both are pilgrims and they met through a love of the Camino and have now published a book of their correspondence. Its subtitle is Letters from an Unlikely Friendship. We discuss the way, the truth and the light of friendship that burns between them. Week nine is Anne Eidstein, a 60-plus-year-old pilgrim who stepped outside her comfort zone to walk the Camino. I had amazing feedback from Anne's story. It's about bravery and overcoming your fears. Week 10, as I said, is Brad Gerino. Week 11, Mick McQueen, and we'll chat to them shortly. Week 12 was Will Boag, a 70-year-old pilgrim with Parkinson's. Will, too, is currently walking the Camino, and he said he isn't fearful of Parkinson's because being diagnosed with the disease has motivated him to do things he never thought imaginable. Week 13 was Dr. Sanjeeva Vijayasinghe, who walked the Camino with his son and returned to write a book about it, Strangers on the Camino. He tells us he and his son Shivantha started the Camino as strangers and finished as father and son. Week 14 was Hospitaleros Julie Ann Milne and Jenny Heesh, a podcast you can't miss if you're thinking of giving back to the Camino. We talk about, in fact, why pilgrims feel a need to give back and why we seek out continued engagement when we return home. Week 15 is New York-based actor, writer and blogger Ginny Bartolone. And Ginny talks about how and why the Camino changes our lives and why we can sometimes suffer when we return, both physically and spiritually. Week 16 is the Australian pilgrim Sam Clear, who walked 15,500 kilometres, finishing with 1,000 kilometres of the Camino de Santiago. And I talked to Sam about prayer and his motivations for continuing a dialogue on prayer, faith and Christian unity. Week 17 was the author, blogger and photographer Rachel Rukert, and we talked about her blog, The 20 Truths You'll Learn on the Camino de Santiago. And week 18, guidebook, author, blogger and writer Johnny Walker Santiago, probably my most popular podcast to date, and certainly the feedback I got was astounding. So if you're new to the podcast, I urge you to go back to listen to the previous episodes. They don't date, as it were, and each episode features the guests' philosophy, what motivated them, what they carried, what they packed or didn't pack, and what impact the way has had on their lives. I've said many times I get a feeling the Camino is calling me back. My wife calls it my midlife crisis. So, God willing, I'm heading back. I hope to walk from Lourdes to France to Saint-Jean-Pied-de-Port before crossing the Pyrenees and walking the Camino Francis all the way to Santiago de Compostela, late August through to early October, over a period of 6 weeks. I'm a musician by trade, and I've bought a new lightweight parlour guitar, which I hope to carry on my back. I have the ludicrous notion I'll be able to sing for my supper. That's the plan. The Camino is calling us, so let's return to the Camino. My first guest this week is Brad Gennaro, a pilgrim and founder of Veterans on the Camino, a US-based organisation providing support for war veterans to walk the Camino to help them heal. Brad wrote Soldier to Santiago about his Camino experience, and in week 10 of my podcast, we talk about the book, his journey as both a soldier and as a pilgrim, and how the way is helping those who served reclaim their lives. I've managed to find him on the Camino. Brad, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, it's pretty noisy there, but we can get... Where are you?
I am on my way to Soria. I just left Torre Castello this morning and making good progress. It's an absolutely stunning day.
And how are you holding up?
I'm holding up fantastic. No blisters, knock on wood. The legs are good, the knees are good. So, yeah, it's just enjoying every second.
You mentioned there that it's a glorious day. How has the weather been over the last 4 weeks?
Well, we've had a little of everything, but overall it's been exceptional. Probably the toughest weather was on the Meseta, and it was driving rain right in your face, strong winds, and it made for a more interesting Meseta walk.
How long did that last? How long did that go for, the driving rain?
There were just patches of driving rain. So luckily I was able to thread my way between most of the storm clouds, but I didn't always get lucky.
So how busy is it at the moment, Brad, the Camino itself?
You know, it's surprisingly busy. There's been times when you have to go albergue to albergue to find an empty bed. There's more people than I expected. But once again, the weather's fantastic, and I think it's drawing a bigger crowd this year.
So you told us earlier in our full-length podcast about a month or so ago that you were taking a handful of veterans with you to help them deal with post-traumatic stress. How are they going, Brad?
Well, at the end of it all, I only have one veteran with me on this first trip, which has been a blessing in disguise. Much easier to manage, and I'm learning a lot of things about how to manage, making sure I'm the safety net for these guys. It's going terrific. I tell you, the changes I've seen and the other Peregrinos have seen is remarkable. It's nothing short of mind-blowing to see how this guy's kind of come out of his shell. And it's physical changes, it's his attitude, it's nearly everything has shown a huge change.
And what about the reaction from other pilgrims? Have they been encouraging of him and nurturing of him?
Absolutely. In fact, I spent the first maybe 4 days kind of in lockstep with him, just to kind of get him comfortable with the whole concept. After that, I distanced myself so as not to influence his Camino, and he immediately started bonding with other people. And I've talked to a lot of the people that have walked with him and gotten their thoughts on yep. what's going on with him, and it's been amazing. A lot of people reach out to him and kind of It just pulled him out of his shell. It's amazing.
And so then in many respects, Brad, it's you're sensing from him the same reaction that you got on your first Camino. You picked up the energy and you felt a sense of renewal and I suppose, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of acceptance in forgiveness in yourself.
Yes.
And you're feeling the same thing. You can see it happening with him.
Yeah, it's almost a little bit strange to see him go through this because I recognize the same things that I went through. So at the very beginning, it was very much, closed off and kind of very, very much on guard all the time. And I realized that that's exactly how I was at the beginning. And then to see that these changes gradually take place, I recognize that totally from my own experience.
And what about you on this Camino? Are you finding a renewed energy? Or are you still soaking up the juju, as they say?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, this one's been different for me because I've gotten the opportunity to really spend a lot of time solo walking. You know, I always stay in touch and close within reach of where Tyler's at. But much of my time has been solo on this one. I've really found that I've enjoyed that.
Yeah, and I suppose that's something that you learn from walking a number of times, that you're not so surprised, I suspect, Brad, that you find yourself alone with all that time to think. You know what to expect is what I'm trying to say.
I do, and I feel like I'm trying to make the most of it. You know, just a lot of time, a lot of kilometers, and a lot of time for reflection. And I'm enjoying it very much.
And will you rejoin with your fellow pilgrim, the other vet, at some stage leading up to that? Or do you plan to arrive together?
Absolutely. In fact, I'm planning to link up with him this afternoon in Soria. I know that he took the route going through Samos today.
Uh-huh.
And I elected to take the other one since I hadn't done it before. So, we're staying a little bit tighter now. I do want to walk into Santiago together with him.
Yeah, definitely. Just on that, you mentioned there that you're taking the alternative route to Soria. I took the route to Samos. How is that route that you're on?
It is stunning.
Really?
It's amazing. It doesn't have the monastery, but I tell you what, the farmland that you walk through, the rolling hills, it's just pristine Galicia, which is my favorite portion of the whole Camino.
Yeah, yeah. And so what town are you in at the moment, do you know?
You know, I was... I have no idea. It's a really small one.
But it's amazing. You've got really amazing Wi-Fi. You're coming through loud and clear. I'm going to let you go because it's about 11:30 in the morning there, so you'll be mid-walk, and you've been very generous with your time. Good luck. Congratulations on what you have achieved and what you hope to achieve, and we'll talk soon, and perhaps we'll touch base again when you finish.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Brad. All the best. Buon Camino. In week 11, I spoke with Mick McQueen. I said at the time, and maintain, it's one of the most extraordinary interviews I've ever conducted in more than 20 years of broadcasting. The former Australian soldier is carrying on the Camino an Australian roll of honour, honouring 41 Australians killed in service in Afghanistan. He opened up about his hopes and his intentions and revealed secrets he carried with him his entire life. We went through his excess baggage together to lighten his load before he headed off. He's only a couple of weeks into the Camino, and Mick McQueen is on the line. How are you travelling, my friend?
Well, one foot after the other. It's—I must say, though, Dan, it's been quite a journey. Every day it's been different, both like physically and mentally. From the very first start when you arrived in St. John, and as you did a long time ago. You know, I'm lucky I stayed at a place called Bulari where Joseph, very, very spiritual guy, had everybody sit down and talk about themselves. And basically, they had to come up with a movie title of, what the Camino was. And, I've obviously booked Carrying 41, but, carrying the role of honour is only one part, as you know, of my journey. And I have actually reconnected with my faith since I started. I didn't know how how strong that would be, but I haven't missed mass in most of the major towns. And I suppose the turning point, as you know, is when I got into Ron's Valley, where I attended mass, and I actually got to speak to the priest there, and I told him about problems, my abuse when I was only young, and he was very understanding, and he asked me if I'd like to go to confession, which I did, and I had my first Holy Communion for 45 years, and I think I was in tears when I did it. It's just so moving that I felt so reassured and was so welcoming into Ron Savali Cathedral, which I think you may have been into. Basically, since then, I have walked by myself all the way. You have met up with people on that, you walk little sections with, but basically I've sort of did it all my own, and each day I found there has been a big difference to myself. I think I'm more patient already, and there's things that happen that maybe I might have reacted a different way to before, but I've learned to listen more. I think that's the biggest thing. I've sort of, because of the language barrier, this is not a bad idea, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, and of course it's a physical, hop up every morning walking, I've had really cold. Yesterday was just unbelievable, where I left Villafranca and it just rained. And I went over the mountain, it was freezing cold, but somehow I took the positive out of that. I was isolated by myself and walking to St. Juan, Atiga, the cathedral monastery, the other side of the mountains of Villafranca. And it's just wonderful to sit back and reflect and think, there's so much more to life, and so many diverse people meeting here. And I've become a listener, and I find, I'm not the only one that has problems. I suppose that's the thing. I'm not on my own. Every single person here seems to have a crisis that they've gone through or something they're trying to discover.
Yeah.
And I've met, people that have recently divorced and they're searching, what am I going to do with my life? I walked today with a UK policeman from Northern Ireland. I met him yesterday. He tells me how, with divorce and then they open up about the struggles that they have with their children and, their operations. I talked to Americans who've told us. He sat down and said, in tears, he says, my son's gay. And he said, never told anyone ever in his life. And he just told us. And
yeah,
I thought, wow, it's just one of those times for honesty and openness, I suppose.
Yeah, so Mick, well, I'll just tell my listeners, if this is the first podcast they've listened to, or perhaps they didn't listen on week 11, and I know you won't mind me saying that Mick, when he was a young boy, was in a boarding institution and was sexually assaulted by one of the clergy. And he did so as a result of, in order to protect his little brother. So Mick, let's go back then to Mass in Roncesvalles. Let's go to the confession and communion. How did it resonate with you? Because really, it had been, you had been hiding from it. Would that be fair to say? For a long, long time. How did it resonate with you then stepping back inside the church and saying, okay, I'm here. You would have had to, am I right in saying staring it down?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a big circle, Dan. It's a big circle. What happened? Yeah, hang on. Hi. How are you going? Sorry, I'm talking at the moment. Just talking to a lady who I pulled out of the trees on the way from Villafranca yesterday. She was huddled under the trees, freezing cold. She's a Dutch woman, lovely woman. And I coaxed her out and says, come walk with me. And she came. She felt reassured that I was walking with her. She was cold. She was a bit frightened with all the rain, so I put my arm around her and said, you can walk with me. And I walked until I got up to the mountains where I actually made it. I think that's when she thought I was certified with man. She just walked past. That's the good part of Camino. You feel good inside doing those little things, people, friends for life. But, what happens in relation to is the full circle is, obviously I felt anger. I was a very angry man. I've been angry, and I think it's because of the deceit by the clergy, by being abused, all the trust and you get angry, and then you walk away from the faith. But inside you, you're really, really angry because you actually enjoyed your faith. Everybody needs something to cling to in life, I suppose. It's not a dominating, you know, there's various forms of, with the religion on, where, how much of a practicing, there goes, goodbye, I hope you get better.
Oh, I love
yeah, thank you. No, my pleasure giving it to you. Yeah, okay then, thank you, thank you. Oh, no, he touched me. Okay, this guy just in the room, he's very, very sick, so I gave him all my flu medicine. So he says it's made him feel better already. Bye-bye. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry about that.
That's all right, Mick. We all know what it's like on the Camino. Yeah, yeah, go on.
I just need to help everybody. I just feel I've patched everybody up. But, yes, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
I am on the Camino. It's live on the Camino.
That's
can't
right.
get any liver than this.
Precisely. So you were saying you've gone full circle, and part of the reason why you felt so betrayed was that you had and religion and the clergy and that aspect of your life was something joyful all those years ago.
And it was taken away from me. I was an altar boy when I first started, and I was lucky. I went from the original masses from a little place called Dalwallinu, which is about 150 miles northwest of Perth, northish northwest of Perth. You know, I live in a little place with actually it's the biggest Plymouth Brethren place in Australia. You might have heard about them. But I went to, you know, we had a convent, right, and we had the school there and everything, St. Joseph's. And I was an altar boy. We had Latin masses and all that. So I, you know, went through all, you know, life. My parents, Italians, very, very religious. But, you know, that was that taken away. And the trust when I went to Northern, because I was actually quite smart, and they wanted me to get some good education. And because my brother, as you know, I had to, it was a deal, you know, deal done with the devil to protect him. And, you know, it's frustrating me mad, you know, but my I don't think my brother, you know, who was there, he knows what happened. And, you know, he turned to drugs and he's never really straightened himself out. But this has gave me an opportunity to square the ledger, to put everything away. And I have. I went and I spoke to this priest for about an hour before I went in. He took me to and sat me down on a little pew, right, in the sunshine. And he wanted to talk through. His English was perfect. And then he said, you know, why don't we go to confession and we'll absolve you of all the things you've done, bad or good or blah, blah, blah. Poor blokey, probably needed earplugs.
Yeah.
But I told him, you know, in my aspect where I think, and he said that, you know, in regards to, you know, what we perceive as sins may not be sins. You know what I mean? It's a variation of good and bad. And,
I just felt so
good when I left there. Then I went to, he asked me to go to my first communion in 45 years because, you know, which I'm not. And there's two ways, you know, you take your communion. You can either take it in your hands or the priest goes in your mouth, right? And was the old way, and which is I felt really. I think my best walk I had on the whole pilgrimage is the next day. I was just like rockets. I felt better, stronger, fitter, clearer. And each day, it's given me time to reflect. So I haven't missed a church since I left there. I've attended them. I've been inside them, and it's good. It's given me a bit more purpose, Dan. It's given me something to live for.
I think it's absolutely outstanding. Mick, when we spoke, you were some weeks away still from leaving. In fact, your journey began a long time before your Camino began. Tell us about the United States. And I should also point out, it was wrong of me to not let our listeners know that you are carrying 41 poppies. It's called the Roll of Honour. 41 poppies in a canister to represent the 41 lives of the Australians, the 41 Australians who lost their lives in the Afghanistan war.
Okay.
You took it across America before you went to Spain.
That's right. What I did was that I obviously did San Francisco, Las Vegas. I did LA and... then I flew across to a little place called Gatlinburg, Tennessee, which is just in the middle of the South, right? It is a different place, different people. And I was, you know, and I brought it. I remember bringing out the Roll of Honour right? So I'm showing these people, and they had cousin this and cousin that come out of the hills from everywhere, and they gave me a big sort of afternoon dinner. And now these people poor, Dan, they got nothing, absolutely nothing, poor as shit, live in shanties, and they opened their houses and up to me. And I was really moved, right? And so I was staying at the Hilton Garden Inn in Gatlinburg, which I said, whoa. So I invited them. I invited them all down for breakfast the following morning. And I thought there might be 6 or 7 turn up or whatever, but there's 27 turned up, right? And the chef was about ready to let loose, right? When he noticed that two of the people walking in were state troopers, right? Friends of mine. And he went, whoops. And they kept coming up to me, and I had the Roll of Honour out on the breakfast table, and we had this huge big table and we put together. And they more or less say, are we allowed to eat? How much are we allowed to eat? Or can we go back twice? I said, you can go back as many times as you like. Well, they had, you know, those great big pastry bloody boards and that yeah. was just, there was nothing there when we left. I won't be invited back there again. But look, they had a fantastic time. That was probably the funniest thing of the trip, right? But I took it to the Players Championship, and I had a goal. I had to be taken around by an Australian golfer, a PGA golfer. Now I'd actually suggested that this would be a great thing to do, but I hadn't been in practice. And I didn't realise how hard it was to get inside the inner circles of these champion golfers. Now, Greg Chalmers is a brilliant guy. I knew, you know, I went straight up and had a chat to him. That was easy. I said, mate, listen, I've got the ball, blah, blah, this is on the first day. And look, he was too happy to say, Mick, no problems, honoured. Straight in his, you know, with Adam, that was horrendously hard. And I was getting really stressed. I had to get it done. I had the poppies, but I managed to speak to him. As soon as I spoke to him, he was just rapt. And at the end of it, we finished, and he came back out, and he, you know, did all the things with the kids, corny, and all their balls and signs. And he had his girlfriend and her mother just next to me. They didn't know who it was, and I didn't know who they were. And they're trying to push me out of the road, but I told them to back off or whatever. I didn't realise it was his girlfriend and the mother. And he came out, and I gave him the Roll of Honour. And all the photographic pack, all the photographers, they were all up the hill, right? All gone up there thinking, oh, there's nothing much now. See, Coon Women's won the championship. And suddenly they sort of noticed there was something going on in the enclosure. And I had about 8 of these things running down the hill trying to get there as fast as they could. And we had the video and all the pictures the fans take, and he laid the poppies for me. It was just absolutely brilliant, and shook hands. And just as we did it, the pack turned up, and they said, oh, can we have a recreation, you know? And Adam said, what do you reckon, Mick? And I said, nah, bugger them. So we left it. So BBC, Golf Australia got hold of me, and they said, look, can we have the pictures? Can we do something? So what they did was this is the PGA Tour, and then they got Golf Australia involved. So it's now on the PGA Tour website. It's on the Golf Australia, did an article on it. So this is recognition, more recognition of the 41. It was just, I mean, the architects, you know, Brian Froome, they're just absolutely rapt at what we managed to achieve in recognising these people. And of course, then I went to New York City. And I wanted to get them laid down the bottom. There's this huge pylon, right? And it symbolised the towers when they fell. It was where everybody met and pinned posters of people they missed and everything you might see.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's down in the tomb of the place, and it's a sacrosanct place where no one's allowed to do anything. No, you know, they've got a survivor's tree up top. Anyway, I walked around and I thought, you know, like, when I've got a mission, I've got a mission. And I noticed this guy who seemed to be the boss, and he had ribbons on. So I went up to him and said, look, Mick McQueen, you know, I says, former Australian life, you know, I told him about the Roll of Honour. I says, the reason I got 41 poppies sitting in the back of the cylinder is because what happened here, 9/11. That is the only reason these people are in this poppies, because what happened here. And then our war on terror with Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And he goes, you know what? He says, effort. I better not say it because it's on radio. Yeah. He says, you're right, buddy. Let's go do it. So he says, I'll get a kick in the ass of this because I'll have it on CCTV. But he says, that's what's going to happen. And so we did it. And I got the ceremony downstairs, photographed, and they were just wrapped. So, yeah, and here I am now. And my poor old bloody British British policeman mate. He's sitting up there walking around in circles going, come on, Mick, we'll never get to Burgos.
Look, I'll just keep you for another couple of minutes if I can.
2 minutes.
Okay.
He said it's okay.
Oh, that's good.
It cost him a coffee too.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, go on.
All right. How is the weather?
Mate, the weather has been terrible the last 3 days. It's just rained. And right now I have sunny, beautiful blue skies, right? Absolutely great. I'll just tell you something. Between Del Rios, between Torres del Rios and, Vienna, beautiful little oasis. It was really raining, and you have a lot of people that don't walk and they take buses and forward their gear here, as you know. Anyway, I was walking down a track, it was blinding rain, and I got hit by a cyclist and knocked 20 metres down into a ravine.
Oh, no.
Where I injured my back and my leg, and I was trying to crawl out of there waiting for the bike ride. The bike ride didn't stop. He thought, nah. He knew he'd stuffed up, but I mean, it was an accident. It was okay. But he shouldn't have been going fast down there. But yeah, I mean, I was in pain and I sort of staggered all the way to Vienna. I had to walk about another 3 or 4 Ks to Vienna. And I went in there. I looked like the mudman. The hostelero took me out the back and I showered and changed all my gear and cleaned all the mud off my pack and that. But oh, that was, I had to walk 11.7 Ks, I think, from there to Logrono. And it was the hardest 11.7 I've done in my life. I just limped and I was in pain the whole way. But lucky I had a rest at Logrono and I was able to get myself back on track. And bit by bit every day I'm getting stronger. But talking to you, you've brought the sunshine out, brother. you have brought the sunshine. Dan the man.
Well, listen.
Dan the man Mullins.
Listen.
Brought the sunshine to me.
Listen, you've got a couple of big days ahead. Well, you've got a couple of big weeks ahead with the Masetta. And you're catching up with some dear friends of mine in the next few days. I'll let you go because if you're on a roll and the sun is shining, you should get walking, my friend. Buen camino. We'll talk in the next few weeks. And just know that all my listeners, our prayers and thoughts are with you. Be strong in heart and mind and you'll keep on keeping on. And let's hope, and we all hope collectively, that you find the solace and what you're seeking.
Yeah, I'll finish off with this, Dan. Mate, the sun is always shining, mate, from within. Buen camino, my friend Dan.
Buen camino. Thanks, Mick. All the best.
Okay, bye, mate.
The feedback in the wake of Mick's interview was amazing, and I just wanted to let him know that he inspired a lot of people. Indeed, he continues to inspire a lot of people. Mick McQueen there, and earlier Brad Gennaro. Brad's website is veteransonthecamino.com, and I'll try to grab Mick for an update when he finishes as well. As I said, I'm getting emails and messages from all over the world. A lot of people want to know how to subscribe to the podcast. Go to the podcast icon on your phone, click on search and find My Camino, the podcast. Click on subscribe and it will automatically appear on your phone each Tuesday night. That's all we have time for this week. Until next week, I'm Dan Mullins. Thank you very much for your company. Thanks for listening and thank you for your support. Until next week, buen camino.